Hello and welcome to another episode of We're Drunk and We Know Things, recorded in front of a slightly inebriated audience who aren't really paying much attention in the Prince of Wales. Mike and Rob are drinking... What are we drinking? Something by the guys who make Hobgoblin.
Hornswoggle?
Hornswoggle.
I think Hornswoggle's a wrestler. A dwarf wrestler.
It's a beautiful sunny day here in Jersey, and we're here to tell you all about probably my fourth favourite film of all time.
Your fourth? Okay.
This month on We're Drunk and We Know Things, it's H. It's Hackers.
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
Yes, so this week is Hackers. Not a movie I was massively familiar with.
Really?
I think I watched it. I was talking to our producer the other day, and I think actually the last time I watched it was like 15, 18 years ago. Like, I think I've watched it once and was like, oh, that was a thing, and I've been unaware of its cult status. So
I think we should clarify, by the way, at this point, that the entire reason we are doing Hackers, aside from it being an amazing film, is that this is a direct request from our producer.
Yes, who we are not allowing on mic.
No. He or she is not allowed to say a damn word during this entire thing, which is kind of tortuous. But yeah, no,
I mean, you definitely will, but we'll just edit him out.
Or her.
Or her.
So this is basically, this is for you.
So made in 1995. Like I say, not a movie I was particularly familiar with. I'm not going to lie, I was dreading it. If you Google the DVD cover, it really is. It's the most 90s thing in the world. But I am a convert. It is brilliant. It's amazing.
I'm not going to disagree.
I watched it three times this week. Last night, I watched it with my wife, who is very patient and understanding about the podcastingness, and normally disappears when I've watched a film for the umpteenth time. But she was stuck around for the first 10 minutes of... I'm just going to stick around for 10 minutes for Hackers. And at one point I said to her, you know you've been sat for an hour, right? It is compelling. It is. It draws you in. It's really good. So I'm pleased, because I was dreading this.
Who's in it, and what do they do?
So who is your daddy, and what does he do? So the cast, I mean, is a brilliant cast. Johnny Lee Miller... the year before Trainspotting, his big break. Angelina Jolie, first film role. She looks like an elven princess, but we'll get onto that later. Rinoli Santiago as Phantom Freak, who you might remember from Con Air, as the guy that dresses up as a dress. Matthew Lillard, who you remember from everything, and he is off the wall crazy. Lawrence Mason, who is Lord Nikon, who I don't really know from anything else, but he's brilliant in this.
I don't remember him being in much else. He must have been in something else, but...
No, I really don't. And Jesse Bradford, who is Joey, who's the young kid. So he's the only one that's actually the age that they're meant to be. He's 15 when they made this movie. And we'll come back to him, because it's quite interesting. Fisher Stevens, who is incredible. You might remember him as the browned-up guy in Short Circuit. Johnny Favour's alive! Yeah, that's him. That's him. Yeah, that film's not racist at all.
Wow.
Yeah, he's the Indian guy from Johnny Favour. Oh, I'm blowing your mind already. It's so good.
And who's he play?
He plays The Plague, also known as Eugene Belford.
Mr. The Plague.
Mr. The Plague, as Pendulette says. Pendulette is in it. Lorraine Bracco is in it as like the sleazy, his paramour, who is also the head of the corporation.
Sleazy exec.
She's Ray Liotta's wife in Goodfellas. She's the... psychiatrist in Sopranos. She is an incredibly accomplished actress, and she is fucking terrible in this. She is the weak link. And whoever's doing her makeup and lighting her in this film needs to be shot. Because she's in lots of scenes with Fisher Stevens, and he looks great. But they're clearly lighting him, and she's there as well, because she looks like Kabuki Theatre. There's that amount of makeup on her face. It's terrible. They do her a disservice. She does herself a disservice. Wendell Pierce... who is it Bud from The Wire? I can't remember his name now. Buck from The Wire, I'm being told, by our producer. Our producer this week, by the way, has no name, man. No name. He is nameless. Little wink to the audience. And Mark Antony is the guy with the glasses and the short hair, who then became J-Lo's husband. But apparently, I've been assured by one of the documentaries I watched, is an enormous, ridiculous, massive superstar in Puerto Rico. Apparently, when he took the role, he had long hair, and during a concert at Madison Square Garden, he's a big star, he asked permission from the audience to cut his hair for the role, and they gladly gave it. Luckily. Because otherwise, you know, what would Hackers have been without that one guy that's in it a bit?
short hair.
But yeah, so I mean, it's a great
cast. It would have been a whole different film.
It's a great cast. It's a lot of big breaks. And it's really... And they are good performances all round. They really, really are. I was really surprised by the level of quality acting in it. I mean, there's some of the... Like, it's very pulpy. It's very genre. But it's still... You know, I mean, Renoli Santiago is fantastic in it. I mean, Phantom Freak is so good. So, so good. I mean, they're all brilliant.
Right, so we're going to run very quickly through the plot.
Yes.
And because both are a no-name producer, also a deep-fried Thai vegetable dish, but there we go, and I know this film inside out and backwards, we're going to do something a bit different. So if you screw anything up, you're going to hear this sound.
Okay.
And we will correct you.
I have watched it every day for the last 3 days.
All right. So what is this film about then, Mike?
Film's about hackers. Thanks very much.
Anyway, so that was Weird Dragon. No.
No, so Johnny Lee Miller, whose name is Dade Murphy.
It is.
He was a hacker called Zero Cool. And he wrote a virus which took down 1,507 systems. Yeah, that's right. I've watched his film a lot this week. 1,507 systems when he was 11, and he gets probation in that he can't touch a computer, not so much as a touch tone phone, for reasons we'll come back to later, for 7 years, and his family get fined $45,000. I'm very fresh in my mind, this film. So this basically leads to the divorce of his mum and his dad, and he moves around all over the place. And at the beginning of the film, he's 18, he's on a plane, he's listening to Orbital, and he's landing in New York, where he's moving with his mum into a very small apartment. It's his 18th birthday, you can tell, because there's a birthday card on his desk. And he's straight on his computer, onto a phone signal connection jobby, and he's messing around at a TV station, putting the outer limits on. Phoning up, he does some social engineering, gets a modem number, blah, blah, blah. If I do it in this detail, this is going to take an hour to do the plot, so I might speed up a little bit.
Just kind of high points.
Long story short, he was a hacker, still a hacker, once a hacker, always a hacker, joins a new high school, meets some like-minded people. They all dress like they're from... They all, like, at one point, someone's wearing an Arsenal goalie shirt. It's very strange. He meets some like-minded people. He meets Angelina Jolie. She's hot. She's got short hair. She looks a bit like an elf. It's a bit weird. Brilliant, though. Pool on the roof. All that kind of stuff. Great stuff. He meets Joey, who is a 15-year-old boy who wants to be elite. Now, elite is like, you have to do a righteous hack in order to be elite. So Joey's trying to prove himself to this group of hackers. And Joey... inadvertently, after a conversation in a bar, which we'll go back to, where Joey is smoking two cigarettes at the same time for some reason, he's telling a story about how he inadvertently went in, fucked around inside a bank systems, and got a cash machine in Connecticut or Oregon or something. Cash machine where?
Bumsville, Idaho,
yes, of course, sure, shit. Go to spend $800. Remember the numerical amount at least. So... they say you've got to do something on purpose. So he hacks into an oil company, goes to the garbage file, which he thinks is going to be innocuous, and copies it. Copies the garbage file. His mum comes in, interrupts him as he copies 50% of the garbage file. Hides it in his air vent, in his empty cigarette packet, forgets about it.
On a floppy disk.
On a 3.5-inch floppy, no, a yellow 3.5-inch floppy. And that's right, I remember this plot. He then gets arrested by the Secret Service. They burst in the morning, he gets nicked, he's naked, his computer's called Lucy because the Apple II computer was named after Steve Jobs' secret daughter. And
I'm not really an heir because it's not really plot, but technically the Lisa that came after the Apple II was...
He's just called Lucy. Man.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was called...
So,
after.
No, that's not...
My producer has stitched me up by giving me fake facts to spit on this goddamn podcast. You piece of shit. Anyway, I can't believe you did that, you son of a bitch. I
can't believe you haven't watched the Steve Jobs biography.
I have. I just am not as many times as I've seen Hackers. So anyway, so so he gets nicked, and the turns out that the person who is in charge of security for the oil company, The Plague, is actually trying to essentially steal $25 million off them and pass it off that hackers are responsible for it. Yeah. These particular group of hackers. he's made a virus called the Da Vinci virus, which is nicknamed, actually named that because apparently there was like a fake virus put out in the 90s. Like it was like a rumored virus called Michelangelo virus that John McAfee basically made his name off of, because he said, oh, there's this Michelangelo virus. It's going to wreck everybody. It's a time bomb. You have to buy my antivirus stuff. And it was all bullshit. And he just made an omelet egg. John McAfee is probably J. We might, or M. We should do an episode on McAfee because that man is...
We can do that for him.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing.
It's going to take a bit of time and some.
So he's
hard
framing these kids. Long story short, they have to fight back the only way they know how. And their only crime was curiosity. So you have
Johnny
Lee Miller,
crimes.
Who is zero cool. Yeah, and actual crimes.
But Johnny Lee Miller has taken a new handle, right?
Which is Crash Override. Angelina Jolie is Acid Burn. Lord Nikon is James Mason is correct. That would be the best. Joey can't decide what his name is. And Matthew Lillard is Serial Killer. Matthew Lillard's actual name, by the way, is Emmanuel Goldstein. So he's actually named for that person, the editor, editor-in-chief of 2600, which we'll come to in the tech segment. But anyway, so they fight back. Lots of hacking is involved. Angelina Jolie gets a nipple out for about half a second. Hilarity ensues, essentially. You want me to keep going?
No, that's it. I think
that's the plot, right?
Summarized the plot.
Yeah, I think so.
The good guys win.
The good guys win. The bad
guys lose. There is a small segment where...
I mean, to be fair, if you mess with the best, you don't like the rest.
No. there is, I suppose, there's like a mini kind of play within a play thing where Acid Burn and Crash Override...
are falling in love.
Are falling in love, but also because they're teenagers, they're fighting about it.
Sure.
So they have a hacker battle.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. That's my favourite sequence in the whole film.
Which is amazing.
That shot when she stood at the cash machine, you really have to watch this film to get all these references in this. Just, we'll wait. Go and watch it.
Do you think they're done yet?
I think they're probably done. Okay, watch it again.
I think twice is enough.
Twice is probably enough.
Okay, fine.
So that scene when she stood at the cash point and she's hacking in to stop his credit cards, Wendell Pierce's credit cards. So, first of all, Matthew Lillard is stood there with his arms crossed, like he's guarding her. It's brilliant. But the blocking and the staging of where they're all stood and the camera movement around them is absolutely amazing.
It's insane.
Like, I've seen this film, like I say, 3 times in the last 3 days. I've watched documentaries about it. That shot is always in it. It's a legit good piece of cinematography. Incidentally, the director of photography is the same director of photography who did Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. Yeah. Interesting.
Did not know that.
Yeah, interesting. So it came out in 95. It was being written from like 92. Raphael Moreau is the gentleman that wrote it. He immersed himself in hacker culture and met Fiber Optic, Mark Aben, whatever, Fiber Optic. Met a load of hackers and kind of absorbed the culture through them and then essentially made it a bit cooler because, let's be honest, hacking culture isn't actually like that, is it? There was a black guy and a woman as part of the group.
They're not that attractive.
No.
I think it would be fair to say. But
they dress better.
Yeah, you know, you could say that there's a whole bit on projected metaphor that we can talk about a bit later on.
It's directed by Ian Softley, and Ian Softley wanted to make them like the new counterculture, like the new punk rock thing. So that's why, like, at the end, when it cuts across the whole world, including Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics, by the way, all the hackers in the world all, you know, join in and help him take down the bad guy.
Okay, they're
all
very let's go.
Sat by the Thames, Tower Bridge in the background. They're all very like punk rock looking, spiky hair, mohawks, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Alt culture personified.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, definitely, he was trying to make them the new rock stars, essentially, which is probably why people who love technology love this so much, because... let's be honest, it puts you on a pedestal. I am looking directly at both of you.
It's not, I'm not going to lie, it is very much a glamorous variant of the life we live.
Well, if you were 15 and super into computers, and let's be frank, probably getting picked on at school about it,
yep.
Then you watch that film and you're like, Jesus Christ, I'm Johnny Lee Miller. You know, that's I get it.
If I lived in New York, I could be Johnny Lee Miller, but I'm stuck here in this English secondary school where nobody understands me, damn it.
Yeah. So he wrote it for years and years and years. There was various studios that it went through, and eventually in 94, they decided to make it. 95 was a big year for hacking movies.
Because there was also...
The Net.
The Net.
Yep.
Which, I'm not going to lie, stand them up side by side. The Net is...
I don't think I've ever seen The Net.
A good thriller.
Is it?
But it's not...
It's like a 90s thriller in the vein of like Kiss the Girls and stuff, though,
yeah, yeah,
right? Like, you know?
Only not as good.
Also, GoldenEye came out in 95. Which obviously, you know, hacking, Alan Cumming is in I Am Invincible. You know, that plays a big part in that as well.
You sit on it, but so you it cannot take it with you.
Yeah, it was very... it's very in the zeitgeist, as it were. Yeah. So yeah, so it was ripe for this kind of thing.
I think bear in mind as well that we're 95, we're 2 years into the World Wide Web.
Yep.
So this kind of concept of connected and transfer of information, this idea that hackers are now a thing and what have you, despite the fact they've been a thing for ages, but we'll talk about that later on.
So they got the director and then the director set about getting a cast together, essentially, like they do. This isn't anything different from a normal movie. Liv Tyler, Heather Graham and Hilary Swank auditioned for the Angelina Jolie piece. Angelina Jolie turned up like a nerd, like dressed up in costume, long blonde hair, glasses, and they were like, oh no, that's not what we want. They explained the counterculture thing to her, and Ian Softley says in one of the documentaries I watched that he had to talk her out of totally shaving her head. So if you were wondering why Angelina Jolie's hair looks so weird, it's because she just cut it all off herself. She's cut her own hair. And weirdly, for the second half of the film, he's just wearing surfing rash vests. Very strange, but okay, that's fine. The costumes will come on to. Renoli Santiago was on his second audition for Robin in Batman and Robin when the casting director, same casting director, said, I don't think you're right for Robin, because, you know, brown. But could a 90s audience have taken a Latino Robin? Now we could probably deal with it, but
yeah.
I say we could deal with it. Yeah, if the internet has taught us anything, it's that they can deal with that kind of thing. But anyway, so they said, you might be interested in this. He read the script and he loved it, and he just basically walked into the part.
Because who was Angelina Jolie's part? There was one of those named actresses.
Yeah.
Actually couldn't do it because they were filming...
So Katherine Heigl was meant to do it.
Yeah.
But she was offered the part, but she had to go and make Under Siege 2.
Wow.
Thank God, eh?
That's like career
Thank
move and
God.
A half.
Yeah.
I don't know. Definitely... Katherine Heigl's nipple.
Oh, I don't really... Katherine Heigl just strikes me as a pain in the ass. Matthew Lillard auditioned for Johnny Miller's part. Didn't get it because... Matthew Lillard's great, but he's not a leading man, is he? He's not got the cheekbones of a leading man. This is cool. Joey Bartlett, who... Jesse Bradford, who played Joey Bartlett, I should say. I don't think I'm even saying that right, but Joey, anyway. His mum is his real mum.
Okay.
Yeah, she was in adverts for, like, Pledge and, Bounty.
They were like,
you know,
we need a Latino mum character.
We need someone to play your mum.
I
and
know,
he's like,
just the woman.
Exactly. My actual mum. So yeah. That's his real mum. Penn Jillette is in it, obviously, of Penn and Teller. And the reason that he's in it, he has, like, Mark Abin, whatever. He set up a challenge in the 90s to hackers that if you could hack into his home network, he will meet you and take you out for dinner. So he'd had whatever security was available in the day, which he'll explain to me later, I have no doubt. And, yeah, he, Mark Abin, managed to hack in and got these contact details. And if you phoned this particular number that you had to hack in to get, you'd phone Penn Jillette, he'd answer and he'd take you out for dinner. So he was, like, tangentially attached to, like, the hacker culture, so that's how he got brought on board. The visual effects of this movie are, I wouldn't say groundbreaking, but ingenious. I mean,
there's a point that runs over the entirety of this, which is, stylistically, this film is very opinionated.
It's very, very seamless in between the cyber and real world. When you look at the stuff when they have, the cyber city and all that stuff, that's all practical effects. So they just built miniatures, but they were massive, but big miniatures, and did motion control camera work and that kind of stuff, and then animated on top. It's a guy called Peter Chang. So when they go to the Cyber City, when it's got all the big glass skyscrapers, those are actual, like, perspex blocks with stuff printed on them, and then they animate on top. So when you see the garbage file flashing, that kind of stuff, that's hand animation on top of that kind of stuff, on top of the
so the whole fly through of the
main
frame,
exactly. Yeah,
is
so
a real
when the plague first enters, never fear, I is here. When he comes through the doors on the fishtail skateboard in the fur coat, coolest thing in the whole universe. So he's actually skating past a load of lit up perspex structures with printing on them, and then they had to wind it back and then animate on top of that negative all the flashing lights and all the bits moving and stuff. So it's actually very practical for a movie about computers. There's not actually any CGI in it, which is why I think it doesn't look dated. You watch Lawnmower Man,
Well, this is the thing, is they clearly took a view that the CGI at the time was not sufficient.
And they were trying to tell a story, and Ian Softley always says that he was trying to tell a story about what is to come. So at the time when it got all the bad reviews and stuff, and it said, oh, it's not realistic and blah, 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 it's because they were trying to say this is about to happen. So they were trying to do something that was like the next step on. I mean, the reviews were saying things like, the internet's never going to be anything but texts and stuff like that. And it's so unrealistic.
Wow.
It's never, you know, seriously, it's never going to be more than message boards.
I do actually regret that Amazon wasn't around at the time. Because going back to do Amazon one-star reviews at launch for this film would be amazing.
Yeah, it would have been incredible.
This is, I suppose, just before you get into the actual nuts and bolts of it, this is what I referred to earlier, that the film has a massive amount of positive metaphor. So it's not necessarily realistic, but it's how it would have been perceived by those individuals.
I mean, I think now it feels naive, but I think it was from a sincere place, because it feels like they're just curious, they're just explorers, they're just kids, and like now we know that like hackers are like stitching up the NHS and fucking stealing people's personal information.
It's more than that. It's like there's a sequence where they boot up all of their machines, and you've got graphics that the machines back in the day
probably could run, but
at the same time you'd never have it as a boot up sequence. The idea being that actually it might just boot into a blinking screen, but all of those kind of animations and the experience this is the embodiment of their excitement of what they're about to do.
Absolutely. And it, like, they had to make it visually they had to draw you in visually. It had to be dynamic, it had to be interesting, which is why they're all wearing sunglasses.
A flashing green cursor on a screen.
Who cares about DOS or Unix or whatever it was back in there?
There is a point to be made about the Matrix later on.
But they, but that's the exact opposite, isn't it? Is that they're looking at the code and it feels retro and stripped down and weirdly feels like, I can't read binary. They look at the binary screen and they see, you know, Joey Pants, Pantaleani, whatever his name is, he says about he can read the binary as a, it's like the inverse point. Anyway, we'll worry about that when we get to M in 2027 and we're doing Matrix. But yeah, so when they're looking at the screen and they are typing and all the things are happening, they just made like macromedia videos or animations. So if you look when they're typing, they press P first to play the video, and then they just hand on the keyboard and whatever. At one point, Johnny Miller, like, you can't see this because I'm doing it into the microphone, but he types into the camera, like the keyboard. That is a bit dodgy, but it's quite cool. So just, and it's a very practical way of thinking about it. So the guy who did that, like I say, is called Peter Chang. I should also mention that this film, there were a couple of familial connections to this film for me, because my uncle edited this film. God help me, he edited Highlander and a few other bits and pieces. He did sound editing on Aliens, totally bragging for someone else now, but with the best will in the world, my uncle is a contract editor. He is a functional editor that works on movies. He worked on Carry On Columbus, and somebody pays him and he goes and edits.
He's a jobbing professional.
Exactly, he's not Walter Murch. But I can't say Walter Murch without going Watford. Walter Murch!
Hey!
If you don't know who Walter Murch is, just look it up on the internet. Sort of
life. If you don't know Walter Murch is, why are you listening to a film podcast?
Yeah, pretty much. But actually, this has got some really nice stylistic flourishes. So it annoys me that they drop it after the first third of the movie. So every time he interacts with a human, it cuts to little inserts of like movie clips and like the battle scene where he's battling Acid Burn and stuff. Like in between, like a dog fight and a samurai
fight. You've got like comic elements pulled through, as in graphic novel.
He comes down from the pool on the roof, and he has a flash to like the guy strangling the woman in the black and white film, and that kind of stuff. They dropped that, maybe because it was going to be, I think, one of two reasons. It was either going to be distracting, or if I'm honest, my uncle is related to me. He was pissed and forgot to put him in. He doesn't listen to this. It's fine. But Peter Chang, who made this movie, and all of those visual effects guys that all worked on this movie together, they were so well regarded after this because it was actually quite a feat of motion capture, photography and that kind of stuff, that they said, we should all do this more. So they formed a company called DNEG, which weirdly my brother and sister work for now. Now, that will be because my uncle helped them get into the industry, and he said to his mate Peter, who he met on Hackers, could you sort my nephew and niece out with a job? My sister now actually works at Delane Lee, which is weirdly on Dean Street in London, but my brother still works at DNEG, but my sister started at DNEG. It's a weird familial connection for this film. And God help me. I mean, I've seen Highlander. My uncle worked on all the Highlander movies and stuff. I watched them all and went, the editing is the editing. It's fine. It's not bad. He doesn't break the 180-degree rule and stuff. But this movie is actually quite well put together. It's got a bit of an art to him, apparently.
You heard it here first, folks.
And that'll be the last time I give him any props. It'll go to his head. So, I mean, that's me for production, really. I mean, there's a couple of bits. Oh, yeah, that is interesting, actually. You know the computer game she plays? She plays Wipeout.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a prototype. So it hadn't been released on PlayStation or anything. So I have learnt this in this week. So it was like this enormous, gigantic, high-res version of Wipeout that they make to demonstrate it, and then they massively downscale it to put it on a little CD so you can play it on PlayStation. So that's like the massively uncompressed, enormous, bananas, amazing version of Wipeout that they play, that he beats her out and gets 1,300,000 or something, whatever it is. But that's me for production.
Fair enough. And I think, as I said, this is I don't know where it sits in the ratings. It doesn't really sit in the ratings. It sits alongside them on a permanent bubble, a bit like
your
Ghostbusters
ratings
last
or
time. My personal film ratings.
Sure. Okay.
We could find out where it sits in the actual ratings.
Oh, I've got it written down.
kind of dread to think, to be honest.
It's it cost $20 million to make, and they made $7 million.
Ooh, floppantastic.
Yeah. I just think it was before its time.
But I think they've
and
probably
also of its time.
Potentially, you know, made that back over time. It is a cult classic.
They've never made $13 million out of DVD sales. It's like £4.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't know. I'd be interested. Let's ask Ian next time we see him.
How's
but
it going?
No, I mean, its cult status is something that I didn't understand until I watched it, and I'm not a techie guy, hence us having a podcast about how you are and I'm not.
I think this arrived at this massive, perfect intersection of a bunch of people achieving a degree of maturity in adolescence, discovering technology at the same time, and it resonates.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
It resonates with an entire generation, and bizarrely, because they didn't try too hard to make it particularly accurate to period computing.
But it isn't, right?
It's a little bit timeless in a weird way.
For the most
90s film ever.
All the phone freaking stuff is quite accurate, like the dial tones and that kind of stuff, and like. It isn't. It's weird, but then, and I understand that, like you say, the flashing green cursor to the bloody. I mean, obviously, I've seen the net. I've already said I haven't, but you know, but that movie is. I know for a fact. Her like, first of all, there's always a back door. Heyo, there's always a back door. lost my train of thought because I made a joke about anal. Shit.
There's always a mainframe.
Yeah, exactly. There's always a back door. And that's not entertaining. So when it got like people saying like, it's not realistic to how it is in real life, of course it's not. It's super boring. Johnny Miller is not handsome enough to pull off just him just typing.
For two hours. I mean, frankly, the one element where they do some serious kind of traditional, they dissect the worm. The Da Vinci
that's a great montage as well.
And it's a montage.
And when they found out he's Iroquois. They found out he's Iroquois.
But at the same time, you actually get a nod to the fact that, you know what, a lot of this stuff is just people typing a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've compressed this all into about 3 minutes, put a sunrise
but
in it, and dropped.
But that is a great, that's a really well put together montage. Nord Nikon discovering he's, I always thought you were black. Like, you know, like that kind of thing. Angelina Jolie being so unimpressed. That's a great, great sequence. It's very of its time, but it's really well put together, and it feels quite dramatic. You get like the stakes, and you get the tension and stuff like that. And
I think
God help me, I love this film.
The other reason that you know it holds some degree of credibility with actual techies, and I think it does. I'm a techie. Our producer is a techie-ish,
techie adjacent. But do you think that's because it is accurate, or do you think it's because
it's accurate enough?
But do you think when you watch it when you were 15, it was an idealized view of yourself that, like, this is what I could be, this is how I want to be viewed, Or do you think it's because... Oh, actually,
obviously, there is a degree of idealism and there's a degree of hero worship and what have you, but the reason that I still watch it and still enjoy it is it's accurate enough. It has nods to elements of real hacker culture.
Well, they had, like, Fiber Optic and they had Emmanuel Goldstein. They had a lot of different big hackers
Everybody's
like,
got
involved
kind of,
in the production.
You know, handles. It's all done over the telephone, which was a big thing.
Yeah.
You know, pre-broadband and what have you. That was
they got
how
up to the top of the Empire State Building and stuff. Into the satellite.
Not sure why. That seems like a bad move. But
it's cool, though, isn't it? That's literally why, isn't it? It's cool.
Yeah,
isn't
you've got things like, you know, they're told that they're only allowed to use the dial-ups and usernames in your collection, and anybody of that time who was actually.
And there's that nice little riff on Taxi Driver, which is a bit cute, but actually it is quite
but
funny.
But they would have actually had that collection, and when you get Serial Killer before the police raid him, and he's trashing all of this massive
Phantom
printouts
Freak.
And what have you.
Phantom Freak. Yeah, yeah.
What did I say?
Serial Killer.
Right, never mind. I
Yes! Vindication, thy name is Dean.
The point is that he's kind of trashing this massive printout and what
exactly
the kind of thing that...
Tearing out, like, pages out of his notebook and stuff.
Like, because it was pretty analog,
nice little moment, like, just arrest me already because his mum's beating him up and stuff. It's nice, nice little moment.
The Secret Service, and this is actually true, were put in charge of computer security.
Well, in 1986, right?
Yeah,
it became illegal in 86.
It wasn't really a thing. I don't know if the NSA did exist, but they were
pretty much doing, like, radio. Yeah, because they have the NSA Red Book, right? The big red book
NSA
by the NSA.
The ugly big book that doesn't fit on a shelf.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
But yeah, so this is all kind of it's accurate enough.
Yeah,
it's,
sure.
It's good
enough for you to like latch onto kind of thing.
At the same time, it doesn't take itself too seriously.
It's definitely got like a feeling of, like I say, like that Taxi Driver homage bit. That's not an homage, really. He's fucking about in a mirror, and like. What I like about that, when it first came on, I was like, yeah, boy, really? We're doing this? But, like, he starts laughing halfway through it. Like, he gets that he's just... Like, when we were 15 and we were just being dicks in a mirror, like, fucking about, you know? Like, it definitely captures as much as they weren't all 18. I mean, Johnny Lee Miller was only 23, to be fair. But, which means he was 24 when he made Trainspotting, by the way. Which is bananas.
Kind of depressing.
It's ridiculous. I mean, he's Sherlock now. And I like Elementary on a tangent. I love Elementary. But John Lee Miller should be like Benedict Cumberbatch or something. He is a good fucking actor. But anyway.
Just made some bad calls. Bad agent.
It's like Christian Slater.
Johnny, you need a new
agent.
Like
Christian Slater. And Ethan Hawke. They make bad choices.
They never
came. Great.
They didn't make out the 90s unscathed.
No.
So there's other hat tips and cool stuff. I mean, I'm not going to lie, we've had this discussion several times over the course of the past week. A large portion of it is this film has probably the best soundtrack of any 90s
film.
Well,
yeah, we got to get onto that, haven't we, at some point?
We have to.
I know it's more your cup of tea than mine, because I was always when I was that age, I was a punk rock guy, Red Air.
Yep, not everybody's cup of tea, but I'm going to say, if you were into
electronic I've been listening to
music,
it for the last week, got it off Spotify, and actually, it's actually fucking good, it's really good.
I mean, let's count them off. Who have you got? You've got The Prodigy.
Orbital.
Left Field.
Portishead and Massive Attack.
Massive Attack, Air.
Is it Air on there as well, are they? Oh, wow, amazing.
There's another one.
Bye.
Get Yourself Connected.
Stereo MCs.
Stereo MCs.
Amazing. Have you heard the album that they make about all the James, they're like the with David Arnold?
Yeah, yeah.
About all the James Bond, the Bond themes. Incredible. Shirley Bassey and stuff. So good.
But this is what I mean, is you've actually got the only one that I consider to be missing. There's no Chemical Brothers.
Were they a big thing mid-90s?
They were.
Were they too underground?
They were still quite underground. That's the thing, is they'd only just released the first album, which kind of explains why they weren't there. They'd been...
But it's like, as well, it's like a different... Like, Prodigy are the only one that I really know. I've seen Prodigy a couple of times live, bragging.
Only twice.
It's a different... it's a different... It's like, it was a different era of Prodigy. It wasn't Firestarter or anything like that. It was like... I mean, the soundtrack is so perfectly suited to the film.
Yep.
I mean, like I say, I'm not an electronic music guy at all. I know you are, and also the soundtrack guy. But
So basically, this film is just winning for me.
I bet it is.
With the hackers.
But actually, it was so perfect. But it was so perfect. Well, like with the way they dress, the parties they go to, when they go to. Oh shit! What's that first one they go to? Cyberdelia.
Yeah, the
Cyberdelia, whatever.
The bar where all the hackers hang out.
Because the only thing I don't get in that movie, and that's how you can tell it's the 90s, if they made it now, no one is just like double dropping pills and stuff like that, because they certainly smoke a lot of cigarettes. Like I say, Joey is smoking
Joey
two fags at one point.
Is the only one that smokes?
No. Rinaldi Santiago smokes at one point as well. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Fair enough.
When they're by the fountain and he's getting the photo taken, and you've got a tail.
Oh yeah, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But
they're kind of squeaky clean, and to be honest, they're meant to be teenagers. You couldn't really have the reality of it, which is that a club of that. And also,
and it's not meant to be like a gritty film about drug abusing teenagers. It's,
no,
they're meant
he
to
made
be
that
innocent.
A year later.
Indeed. But they're meant to be innocent, aren't they? They're meant to be. Their only crime was curiosity and all that kind of stuff.
And more importantly, they're meant to be smart.
Yeah. So he's meant to be like a super genius, isn't he? Right.
And you've got this whole point where they kind of crash the classes, and you get actually Goldstein's character quoting Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, he quotes Ozzy. She quotes his mum. He quotes Kerouac. Is
Gibson.
It? No, he doesn't.
No.
Is it not Kerouac?
No, it's
Bukowski.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know. Looking at
Angel-headed hipsters.
Yeah.
I can't remember who it is. That's really bad.
We've let ourselves down here, gentlemen.
Yeah, but the English teacher liked it.
He did, and he was on the list. He was on the list. So shut up, Angelina Jolie.
He hacked his way on.
I mean, that like little bits that I love in those movies. There's all the little moments. There's the little moments like Phantom Freak when he gets nicked. Ginsburg. Thank you. He keeps tapping the hang up. What's it? Gets through to the operator, phones, acid burn.
Oh yeah, Freak is a total freak.
It's in that place that I hit that thing that one time. Like, there's all these little moments that are really nice. The bit with the umbrella, he gets his own back for the pool on the roof. There are these bits that are just so, they seem like quite genuine, as much as they are over exaggerated because it's the film. You know, it feels sincere. It's weird. I really didn't expect to like this movie as much as I did. But I will, honestly, this is one of those movies I will go back. Escape from New York, I'll watch it if I'm around at someone's house and they put it on.
Yeah.
But this, I would actually watch because I'm like, I fancy watching Hackers now.
Yeah.
Our producer is looking at us with a massive smile on his face because he's like, I fucking told you. I was dreading this and I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it.
Welcome to the dark side.
So, with that, our glowingest of glowing reviews.
I mean, there are now three people sat around this table, two of which have microphones, all three of which have pretty much achieved a level of adoration for this film.
Yeah.
It's a level. I'm not saying it's the best film
ever. I think it speaks so highly of it that I don't like it because it's so ticky.
Massively enjoy this film, which means I think it's time to hear from some people who don't like it.
And there are a few.
That's it. Amazon one-star reviews.
Cue the jingle.
The movie is really great, but we all know haters gonna hate. We all know the film's alright. These crazy people think it's shite. From the depths of the internet, we bring to you, it's Amazon One Star Reviews.
So, yes, One Star Reviews, drink. So, One Star Reviews, there are a few, I won't lie. A lot of them are around the fact, and we found this ourselves, that Shout Factory, who do great work, they release a lot of good cult movies on their anniversaries and stuff you wouldn't always be able to get. They released a Blu-ray that had loads of special features, on which I highly recommend for the special features. However, the print is fucking dog shit. And that is a horrible turn of phrase, but I hate to be that bloke from the one-star reviews, but it is terrible. Watch it on Netflix. It is far better quality. Far, far better quality. Get the Blu-ray if you're really into it and you want all the special features, but don't expect to enjoy the print. But yes, so I have several, which I don't think I'm going to go through all of because I think we'd be here for a week.
I think I can imagine that this film potentially was disliked by many. Well, frankly, the fact that it didn't manage to net 7 mil
at
the box
office
tells you
something. There's a lot of stuff about it, like it's dated and blah, but
your highlights of the barrels of Amazon.
So these, a lot of them are from 2016, since the Blu-ray came out. So Shorts is his name, don't wear it out. Piss poor product, I would not even crap in them.
Is he talking about his shorts?
I think he might be talking about his shorts, but he wouldn't crap in them, whatever they are.
Well, neither would I. That's not a good thing to do.
Amazon customer, as I've always said before, a fucking coward.
Yeah.
Burnt DVD, didn't play on my DVD players. When I looked...
Let me finish.
When I looked at the back of the DVD, I saw there isn't any burnt information. It was a blank disc. Well, I'm not sure that you can blame the Blu-ray of Hackers for that. You fucking idiot. All you're doing is reviewing yourself being a shitty pirate.
Or buying from a really good pirate.
Burnt DVD and didn't play on my DVD players. You felt the need to go on to Amazon. Okay, right.
Fine, we feel for you.
I like this one because he's got a good name. Eliza Rosengauss from June 2016. Talk about a dated MeVe. I always think that I've misspelt stuff typing into this, but then I remember that I am type. This is copy and paste.
Yeah.
Talk about a dated MeVe, and there is absolutely no connection to who a hacker is and what he really does. Well, that's not true because they had a shitload of hackers talking to him about it.
Fine. And is that rarely does or really does?
I think he really is meant to.
Because rarely, I would.
It's rarely as
that.
In R-E-L-L-Y. Yeah.
There is no connection to what hackers rarely do. They rarely swim across the channel, for example, and that's not in the film.
That's true.
She's spot on.
Ben Doggy Daddy from July 2016.
Sorry, say again.
Ben Doggy Daddy. Presumably he's the daddy of Doggy, or he is the father of a hybrid dog. Nothing worse than a dated tech-based film, and I mean really dated. I'll raise you this, racism. That's worse than a dated tech-based film, isn't it?
Yeah, Nazism.
Rape, Ben Doggy Daddy? Isn't that worse?
Bestiality.
Get your fucking priorities in order, Ben Doggy Daddy. See Gene Hamilton, which I feel like should be followed by the third. Way too weird for me. The movie pictures everyone as a weirdo.
Fair.
Fair cop.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the point. Francine Grabham. Bet she does.
Are you making these up?
No. Francine Grabham. Beering. I'm on a limb. I think she went for boring. Beering.
No, Beering.
You can edit your reviews, right?
I don't.
Do you want this? Yes. Click. Yeah. Oh shit! I've got to go back. No, Beering.
Split.
And then this is a longer one.
Okay.
Amazon customer, because they're a fucking coward again. An uncomfortable movie that does plenty of everything wrong. Plenty of everything. Tautology, fine. Here's a few of the wrong things. Number one, fabricated and unrealistic plot. First of all, outside of documentaries, all films have got a fabricated plot. It's the point of. It's a film.
It's fiction.
It's fiction, indeed.
Unrealistic. I would take umbrage at.
Yeah, but isn't that the point of a film? I watched James Bond, felt like. What? I watched Star Wars, feels a bit unrealistic. Yeah. Yeah, mate. Brilliant.
Don't get me wrong, Avatar, we haven't even got to Mars yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Jesus.
Number two, the producers have no idea about computers and wanted to develop a visually appealing movie about computer hackers. Yes.
That I will give her, but see aforementioned comments about it. The entire thing is a fucking metaphor.
Because otherwise it would have been fucking boring. Number three, the characters have no likeable traits and are never fully developed. That's not fair. They're incredibly likeable.
They're pretty much the only thing that's developed.
I mean,
I guess
that is our opinion. There's not exactly a character arc much. I mean, I suppose there is for Johnny Lee Miller.
Angelina Jolie, probably a bit of a bitch.
Yeah, but she swings by the end. Johnny Lee Miller goes from
eminently likable.
Yeah, and Johnny Lee Miller goes from very introverted to being part of a community and stuff. They definitely got arcs. I think they're definitely likable. Anyway, number four, real life hacker. Sorry. Real life hacker culture is nothing like what was displayed. The movie depicts hackers as lowlifes that smoke and get into social situations. So first of all, he's saying that hackers don't smoke. Okay. Not all of them, that's fair enough. But they get into social situations, and in brackets, the social situations part especially does not happen with real world hackers. So that is true, I guess. So they have the yearly hacker con or a def con or whatevs? Are they not a personable?
As we will discuss in the tech episode, social interaction, congregation, and socialising is a huge part of hacker culture.
So on the back of that, the last part of this person's review.
However, just to finish off, whatever your name is, I've already forgotten.
Francine Grabham.
No, this is a coward. A coward.
Although this is a coward, this is a coward.
Actually, when, groups of hackers would socialise, they would do so in their own environments. Say, for example, a hacking club where they can all go do their own thing. And it has a bunch of people selling hacker shit outside.
Hacker shit.
including Goldstein's amazing mixtape.
You can't see this, but he is literally, he's just mounted a very high horse. Not a very high horse, I'm having to hold the mic up to him. So the last part was what you really like then. Movie might be appealing to stupid people, stoners, or people who don't know anything about good movies. All right, well, that's just your opinion.
I think we all fall into at least one of those categories.
Yeah, exactly, it's a bit of a catch-all. Do not watch if you know anything about how computers work. Which I think is probably against the reason that this film has got a cult status, because people who know how computers work fucking love it.
I can't imagine that anybody is going to be walking through the video store or scrolling through Netflix not knowing anything about computers, not having an interest in computing, stop on a film that's all about computers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what?
That's why I've never
the
watched
movie
it.
For me.
That's why I've never watched it. That's why I haven't had repeat viewings for the last 20 years. It's because, yeah. So that was Amazon One Star Reviews. Muppets, as always.
You're a moron, whoever you are.
So
cowardly moron.
That does bring us on to.
I'm sorry, I need to tie up my high horse.
Oh, okay. Clove hitch.
Okay.
So that brings us on to the last part of the podcast, as always is, movie recommendations. Cue the jingle. We haven't got a jingle.
We need a jingle. If anybody out there is listening, by the way, and has any musical talent, unlike Mike.
Whatever. I'm this generation's Frank Sinatra. They call me the Jersey Mickey Bubbles.
Yeah, feel free to submit jingles. We're not going to use them, but we could use a laugh.
Have a bit of a laugh, yeah, exactly. We'll definitely play them.
What would you recommend? Oh, this is tricky. This is really tricky.
So
there's some obvious ones.
This movie is obviously about technology and its uses for good and for bad. And if there's one movie that typifies that, a movie of well-intentioned technological geniuses who use technology for well-intentioned reason, repeating myself.
Does this movie also have Prodigy on the soundtrack?
It does.
Yep, so, yeah. I think I can see
they
where
they were using
going
it
here.
For one thing, but some people can use it for bad things, and it didn't do what they expected to do. Of course, it is always Event Horizon. They built that Event Horizon drive to try and make faster-than-light travel, although, as Alan Grant very quickly explains, not really. I watched it last night after Hackers, I won't lie. It's technology that's got out of hand. They were innocents, man. And they accidentally transported themselves to a hell dimension.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that actually, for once...
Came out the same year, by the way.
If you enjoyed the kind of feel of Hackers, the kind of what have you... Event Horizon, not a bad shout.
Actually, no, seriously. I was originally watching it and was like, I really feel like a 90s thriller.
Yeah, I mean, it's got, you know, it's darker.
In all seriousness...
Right, go on.
Don't fuck around with the net, because that sounds like bullshit.
Yeah, don't watch the net.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Johnny Mnemonic. Mnemonic. No, it's N-E-U. Mnemonic. Johnny Mnemonic. Definitely watch
the
that.
The M is silent.
What's that movie? Existence. The David Cronenberg movie with Jude Law and stuff. Great movie. Great movie.
Johnny Mnemonic, by the way, is based on a book by William Gibson.
Yes.
Neuromancer. Yeah. That has proper hacker props.
Which is why the computers are called Gibsons in this. Because William Gibson, yeah.
See?
GoldenEye.
Nope.
What other hacker movies are there? Sneakers with Robert Redford.
Sneakers is an absolute must watch, and frankly, is a so better hacker film than Hackers.
That is it's slightly more realistic, isn't
accurate.
It? Yeah, yeah.
It is absolutely amazing. Seriously, if you haven't watched Sneakers,
it's got Dan Aykroyd in it.
Go and watch it.
So good.
If you haven't watched Sneakers recently, go and watch it again.
It's on
it
Netflix.
Totally holds up.
It's on Netflix.
It's amazing.
I weirdly watch Sneakers way more than it deserves. It's like, there's that, and it's not related to this, but what's that movie with Steve Martin and Michael Caine in it? About the con men?
No idea.
That one.
Anyway, that
sounds good. Bastards. Yeah, that's the one I always watch. Yeah, that's great.
Which has been remade, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, Gender Flip.
Okay, give it a go. But yeah, definitely Sneakers. Well, what do you recommend? You're the person to do this.
Honestly?
What are the movies then? For the 90s?
We've covered the big one is Sneakers.
Sure.
Watch The Matrix.
Yeah, I guess.
If you want overblown hacker culture.
That's not on my list,
watch
really.
The first Matrix film and
yeah,
stop.
Sure.
You know, just
definitely don't watch the last one.
Enjoy it.
And watch the Animatrix. That's amazing.
Definitely watch the Animatrix. Consider casting the net a bit wider. You know,
sure.
There are all sorts of documentaries and additional bits and pieces.
Yeah,
that
I
come
think
from
if you're interested
time.
In, then definitely like those DEFCON documentaries that you've been recommending to me.
DEFCON, Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Right.
Anything that basically covers
the TV show Silicon Valley.
From a TV show perspective.
Halt and Catch Fire?
Halt and Catch Fire.
Yeah.
Again, this is all stuff that basically feeds that weird blend of techno-futurism and nostalgia.
And, like, Halt and Catch Fire is all about, like, the beginning of CompuServe, is it?
Compaq,
yeah. And so it's about, like, the beginning of, you know, it's all about the beginning of so, the beginning of the culture. So, yeah, that's
I think the big two for me would be, yeah, watch Sneakers. Don't even wait. Just go. We'll wait.
Yeah, yeah.
Watch The Matrix.
Yeah.
Watch The Matrix Part 2. I can't remember what the fuck it's actually called.
Before you do some edibles and then watch the second part of The Matrix.
Yeah, yeah. Take
but
a break.
But don't do edibles and then watch the third one.
No.
In fact, just don't watch the third one.
No, just, they never made the third one. Shame. Yeah. It could have been a trilogy, but they didn't do it. More TV, right? So we've got the likes of Mr. Robot that we'll come on to
Mr. Robot, yes.
And this
of
is, to be honest, this is like a lady who says hackers don't socialise. Well, yeah, congrats, you got your wish, albeit 2 decades later.
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Robot's got an amazing. Have you used that app, game of theirs? Do you have to do the social engineering to get people's passwords out of them and
amazing.
Stuff?
Amazing. No.
It's a really good app. So it's like a choose your own adventure, and you have to, like, choose the response. You're basically text messaging different security people in different companies, and you have to use social engineering to get their passwords or get access to the network and stuff, which very much feels like dumpster diving and that kind of stuff. It's a good exposure to, like, that practical part of hacker culture that, I mean, it's not an app that's going to teach me how to code or something, so that's good. Yeah,
doesn't actually teach you anything. So
my God, we've got a recommendation part of the podcast, which is actual legit recommendations.
And
isn't just an excuse to say
I'm running around. I suppose 2 more bits. One, if you really love kind of hyper-visualised cyberspace and all the rest of it.
Lawnmower Man.
No.
Lawnmower Man 2.
God, no. check out Ghost in the Shell.
Sure, the anime one.
Or the remake, which I'm a massive.
Is it really good? I haven't watched it.
I will talk about it later. We missed this in G. You didn't vote for it. You're idiots. No, I firmly believe that.
Well, anyway, okay.
Yep. Ghost in the Shell would have been more interesting. Everybody loves
Ghostbusters. The anime
Ghost
in the Shell.
We turned anybody on to Ghostbusters.
There isn't The Matrix without Ghost in the Shell.
No.
I mean, the opening sequence of Ghost in the Shell and the opening sequence of The Matrix are basically shot for shot.
Mm-hmm.
Basically shot for shot.
And the opening sequence of Ghost in the Shell anime and the opening sequence of Ghost in the Shell Watch the Shops are more or less shot
really?
For shot. Okay. Yeah, so Ghost in the Shell, if you like the whole kind of neuromancer cyberspace realisation, if you want just a fairly good representation of young, smart people, albeit not gorgeous, or not particularly gorgeous...
Go and rob those.
War Games.
War Games, 1986. Massively preempted all of this, yeah.
9 years before, you've got a pasty, slightly spotty teenager.
Matthew Broderick at his best.
Breaking into the military.
Do you know what? This is amazing, and this is a bit of a tangent, but you know Vincenzo Natali, I don't know if you know that name, directed Cube, right? I love Vincenzo Natali. Incredible science fiction director. I highly recommend Splice if you're going to watch that. But he is making Neuromancer into a movie.
So when that comes out, watch that.
Yeah, watch that.
And that's it. Come on, we've just recommended a ton of stuff.
Jesus.
It's a bit heavy on the sci-fi, but frankly, it's a hacker movie. What
yeah,
do you expect?
What do you want? Yeah.
Watch Warship Down. Have at it. We're not going to judge you.
I think that's us. This has been the H episode of We're Drunk and We Know Things, recorded live in the Prince of Wales back garden, drinking Hoppleganger by Witchwood. Our producer has no name, man. No name. He is nameless. Listen in next time for a very special... presumably extremely long Indiana Jones episode. Follow us on Twitter at WDAWKT, on Facebook at We're Drunk and We Know Things. Go to Stitcher, go to iTunes, go to bloody the local record store, go around your mum's house. Our podcast is everywhere. Just wherever you get good podcasts from, go there because they also do us. I forgot. No, they leave Phantom Freak in jail. So in the last scene, when Matthew Lillard goes on TV and he's like addressing the world and he feels like God and whatever, you've got Joey and Lord Nikon get led in. Because apparently no one's supervising any of these prisoners in this secret service place. John Lee Miller and Angelina Jolie come out of their interrogation room and they're all hugging and celebrating and high-fiving and stuff. And there's no reference or shot of or reference to Phantom Freak.
Just another Latino stuck in the system.
They just leave him in there. And this is what I was saying to our producer on Thursday. That's how you do Hackers 2. They leave him in jail. He falls. He's angry with them. He comes back. He gets out of jail. And then he's out to get them. Hackers 2.
Hang on. Isn't that the plot of Sneakers?
Are we saying it's a shared universe? It should be.